Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, decades of discontent, or as Martin Luther King would have called it, the language of the unheard. The violence in Sherman Park this past weekend may have come as a surprise to some, but maybe not to others, even though burning buildings, smashing police cars, shooting guns in the air is hard to understand. We'll hear more of what Martin Luther King had to say about that later in the show. Here are the statistics. Milwaukee County is considered the most segregated part of this country. The unemployment rate for black residents is 20%, three times greater than for whites. The median annual income of black households is much lower than that for white households. Wisconsin has the highest incarceration rate for black men in the nation. The gap in life expectancy between black and white Americans is decreasing in America. Wisconsin is the only state where the gap has become worse. It has been said by many that Milwaukee is the worst place for black people to live in America, and historically, the tension between the police and the community has been quite high. We're going to talk about all of that this hour of the program. We will have four guests with us during the course of the hour, two people we thought of immediately who have been on our show before and gave very important messages. Muhib Dyer is co-founder of Flood the Hood with Dreams. He's a key member of the I Will Not Die Young campaign, which is a very powerful campaign. He's conducted seminars and conflict resolution workshops in Milwaukee public schools. He's from Milwaukee. He's been counseling and mentoring youth through lots of programs while he was in high school himself. He's performed all over the country and some years ago was a finalist at the National Poetry Slam. We thank you for joining us once again. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Kwabena Antoine Nixon is also with us. He's been here before. He's a poet, educator, event organizer, and the co-founder and host of Poetry Unplugged, one of the largest weekly poetry experiences in the country. He is founder and president of Milwaukee Urban Entertainment Alliance, also the co-founder of Flood the Hood with Dreams and the I Will Not Die Young campaign against youth gun violence. Kwabena, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
You know, it's interesting. I was listening to Martin Luther King some this morning, and he said on a 60 Minutes show some years ago, which I think is a good framer for our conversation, he was talking about riots in this country in the 60s, and there were many after his death in 1968. Mm-hmm. There were some before that. He said that it would be morally irresponsible for me to condemn violence without at the same time condemning the contingent intolerable conditions that exist in our society. Mm-hmm. These conditions are the things that cause individuals to feel they have no other alternative than to engage in violent rebellion to get attention. And I must say tonight that a riot is the language of the unheard. Mm-hmm. Your comments on that? Muhib?
Yes. Riots are the language of the unheard. And if you and I was looking at that comment too in my research and my thought about what I was going to say today. And if you go a little bit further in that statement, he also says, he speaks to what America is not listening to. And he says, America is not listening to the cries of freedom and justice of the people. And he said, America is not also paying attention to the fact that the white population seems to be more concerned with tranquility and more concerned with the status quo than they are about the humanity of mankind. And this is what the circumstances always come down to, because the media oftentimes when riots occur, we focus on the hoodlums. The quote unquote hoodlums, right. the thugs, the hustlers, the criminals, the people who are looting the children with erratic behavior, who are riding around in cars and shooting pistols and, you know, just a further way of criminalizing the image that is always perpetuated every day in the 9 o'clock nightly news. But it's actually a scapegoat for the reality that there is a deep rooted pain. There were the riots don't begin the day that you begin burning down a gas station. It's a riot going in the soul of these children who have aspirations and dreams, just like the kids in Wauwatosa, who has aspirations and dreams, just like the kids in Shorewood or the surrounding areas. These children want their dreams. They want goals. They want to achieve in life. But they seemingly don't have the access. And when you don't have the access, it puts you in a position where you do some very imbalanced things. And as a society, we need to get better at creating freedom and justice for all. Like we propose we do.
Klebanon, what kind of access is needed?
Well, a chance to out to expression. We've been on the ground out there with young people, and as I was telling, we walked in, we were having a conversation. They feel they don't have a voice, and the only way a child, a baby, as Muhib says in one of his poems, can get your attention is by crying. And you have a group of people out there who feel that there's unconsciously not knowing that there's no justice, no peace. So they need access to have an expression. They need access to funds. I mean, just basic everyday funds to support their families. They need access to other parts of the city that they don't know. Everything is concentrated in one area. Everybody is pushed, shoved. There's no room. So as Muhib stated, it was going to happen at some point. So when you don't have access to a media outlet, one of the great things about social media now, it makes everybody's narrative fair. Mm-hmm. Everybody gets a chance if they go live to tell this is what's really happening.
That's right.
Versus, well, sometime when the media flies in and starts saying, well, it was this, it was that. You get a chance, unlike in Katrina and unlike Rodney King, unlike the uprising in the 60s, you have a chance to actually say, this is exactly what's happening. We were standing here, and they ran over here, and they provoked us, and we went back and forth, and this is what happened. You have footage, but I guess in these days, even the footage these days isn't helping or aiding. But young people just need access to have their voices heard.
When I read those statistics at the top of the hour, we have known what segregation is like in this city for a long, long time. We've seen manufacturing jobs leave, family-supporting jobs. Many, many people in Sherman Park had those, and in the city had those after World War II and for a number of years. Why is it, do you think, that we haven't seen any kind of really urgent, this is an urgent situation, we need jobs for people, we need access to really good schools, we need that kind of access. People have known this has been a problem for a long, long time.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, systematically, there has been development. The development is the prison industrial complex, as opposed to the industrial age that afforded men like my stepfather a job at A.O. Smith, where he worked for 30 years when he got out of high school in the early 60s, and men of that age, and it's ironic, I'm looking right out the window and I see the Allen Bradley clock. Men of that age said you can graduate from high school and you could get a job at Allen Bradley or A.O. Smith or some of the other factories. And if you got fired on Friday, you can get another job on Monday. And you could get $50,000, and at that time you could take care of your family, buy a house, buy a car, and really just feel like a man, like you can contribute and provide for your family. Those days are gone. And what has happened is on the other end, is the fact that a lot of folks in upper Wisconsin have jobs now, and those jobs come by way of us in the city committing crimes. And when a child in the inner city commits crimes, and even if they want to change their lives, they don't have the same access when they come back home because they have a felony. So those individuals may try to get a job. And at the same time that they're trying to get a job and they've never been able to get a job, then you have guns from manufacturers that we don't produce that are readily available. And you have drugs when we don't have any poppy fields or airplanes to fly the drugs in that are readily available. And you placed in a position where you have to make a decision. Mm-hmm. Do I starve or do I take care of my family? So development has occurred. We have seen development of the reproduction of mass crack houses in our neighborhoods because Dope Incorporated is the only employer. And we have seen, on the other end, mass incarceration fly off the roof because they are the only employer in the suburbs. So I think we just have to get real with what's going on in America. And what's going on in America really is that the children, brown children, black children, are being sacrificed for the good of the surrounding communities. And until we get a heart and a love and a respect for all people, like it is said in the Constitution, like it is said in all of our pledges, freedom and justice for all, until we really live that, we will continue to see riots and we will continue to see what we see every day.
Let's talk a little bit more about the violence, because it has made it really scary for people in that neighborhood, which was founded by people of very good intention who wanted to break this segregation in this county years ago. People have lived there. Teachers have lived there. People who had those good paying factory jobs. The housing is solid. The people are good to each other. I lived there for 27 years. It's a strong community. Yeah. And now, this is from, I think it was on CBS. Here, let's just listen, and I'd like, Kwabena, for you to respond to this. Mm-hmm. This is a 14-year-old, Shania Pryor, who lives in the neighborhood, and she is just really afraid, and nobody should have to live with that kind of fear. So let's listen to her and get your response.
I feel scared. I'm scared to even go to school now because I feel that the situation is getting too far.
Do you support the police?
Yes, I do. I feel they keep me safe, but sometimes I just feel they're not keeping me safe when they kill our family members.
And how old are you?
14.
Do you think everybody, obviously this whole issue is upsetting you. You're crying.
Yeah, it upsets me because I don't feel that they should be killing and burning down stuff.
The violence has really taken a toll on you.
Yeah, and it's by my neighborhood and I don't feel safe.
What would make you feel safe around here?
The violence stopping. The violence just need to stop.
Kwabena.
Could you repeat what you...
How people in the neighborhood can get rid of violence, what the community needs to do, what leadership needs to do. You can't live and get access to anything or live your dreams if you're worried about getting shot, if you're worried about guns going off, if you're living in that.
In the traumatic area.
Right.
First, before I answer that, if I can, I wanted to state this. Prior to me, you asked Muhib a question about the why, right? It's not personal to some. Do you understand what I mean? It's not personal. There's a difference that my mother said to me when I went outside, be careful, come back in the house, right? Mm-hmm. Versus a mother in the suburbs, a white mother, etc., saying, okay, I'll see you when you come back home. When a shot is fired in that neighborhood, every mother is looking for their child. Every father is looking for his son. Mm. He's worried about the description, right? After it happens so much, people in the community, you become numb to it. Mm-hmm. Even with the young girl crying, there are some people who go, oh, man, he got shot. And they go, play basketball. Not because they don't care, but it's almost, this has become the narrative. As we spoke, this is the daily narrative. And then the older people in the community, it's such a disconnect of, I can't understand why they're doing this. And then the younger people are saying, they don't understand why we're doing this. But the real question, nobody is talking. Then there are police officers who, many do their job, but then there are some who come in and have no connection with the community, right? They're, just being honest, we ask the question, how do we, about the violence, their perception is based on what they've heard. Mm-hmm. And if it's been that they're animals, they fight, they gangbang, etc., they're not looking to say, how do we solve it? They're looking like, we got to stop this right now. So it's more Gestapo-like tactics than it is, hey, when we were kids, you ran up to the police in some sense to talk. They had the POW League. It was a community relationship. How do you stop the violence when it's personal? It's not personal. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, I understand.
It's not... Can we be honest? If these were young white males being shot in neighborhoods like this on a daily basis, incarcerated, would this become a national epidemic, or does it become a national epidemic now? Because you say, in my neighborhood I grew up in, drugs were always a problem, but then this young white male got shot buying drugs on the west side. The federal agents flew in and locked everything down. But my friend got shot 2 days ago and it was just a drug related. Do you understand what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's not personal. It's not an investment in that community. They don't see anything bright coming out of that community. So the powers that be wouldn't go in there. Now, what we can do as a community, we have to get back to black-on-black love. We have to get back to being human again. We have to get back to people in the neighborhood. There's no more neighborhoods where you live for 27 years. You know, my family doesn't live in the neighborhood. We live next door to each other. You grew up in that neighborhood. People live in neighborhoods now, what, maybe 4 to 5 years at best? So there's nothing invested in. There's no community neighborhood block, not block watches, but what do you call it, neighborhood block parties, etc. There are more younger people in the neighborhood who don't have a relationship with the older people, and young professionals need to step up. Whoever has made it out, as a good friend of mine, Carl Wesley, says, people are getting out the hood. It's just nobody is coming back.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you understand? It's one thing to get out, but are you going to come back and bring resources? Mm-hmm. Are you going to come back and invest? Because like Muhib said, we're investing in the industrial complex. There's no problem. Question that they are investing in prisons. But are we really investing in, as I said, as personal as I close with this, if it's not really affecting you, do you really, really want it to stop? Because it doesn't, you're not bleeding. The people over there are bleeding, but on the other side of it, it's only going to stay contained for so long.
Yeah, we're definitely not investing. I think that that's loud and clear. Why are there so damn many guns, for heaven's sake? Why do so many people say they need a gun because they have to protect themselves? We got a whole lot of guns in this city.
Yeah. I just want to say this before we move on. You know, they said, the young man said, I'm keeping my gun on me. Right.
Right.
You know, yesterday a young man ran because it was 20 police be following him. Right. He broke and ran. He had a soda in a bag. Right. If you read the news on both sides, if you've been watching the news, if you're a young black male and they say, get in the car. I mean, honestly, would you right now get in the car based on what we've known? Because we're not getting, when you get in the car, a lot of times we're not getting out the car. You know, we're not leaving the you're not leaving, in the case of Sandra Bland, you're not leaving the place. You know, oh, well, he failed, right? So would you really get in the car? And then you say, well, you have the citizens carrying guns, all right? And then you have the people that are committing acts carrying guns, and then you have a police officer carrying a gun. Mm-hmm. So one push, everybody, it's a show where everybody upped the pistol in this comedy they were doing. But it's almost like society now. You know, everyone is on edge. Everyone is on edge. So before Muhib asked, I just said, you know, why is everyone carrying guns? Because everybody is saying you need one. The police say they need more protection. The people in the community say they need more protections. The people who are doing these acts say, I'm not ever going to be out without one, because if they catch me, I'm not going to be naked. Do you understand what I mean? It's almost like it's a war society that's been pushed on everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But America is Bible and guns, too.
Mm-hmm.
And the largest lobbyist organization is the NRA. And so you have people all over this country that swear by their guns and value their guns more than human life. So if that's the values of the society come from the top down. It's not something that's just organic or, you know, originated in the quote unquote underdeveloped areas of society like the hood. Is something that was fed to us from the top down. And what was very interesting about that whole point is in the Second Amendment, you know, a lot of young people in the neighborhood now have their CCW as well, but it doesn't work the same. I heard the young brother of Seville speaking about that Seville may have had his CCW. He may have been legally carrying a firearm, but because he's in the neighborhood, did it really matter? So did his rights work the same way for him? Because now, if I have my CCW and I have a pistol on me and I have the right to carry, and a police officer sees me and they have this preconceived notion in their mind that I'm a thug, I'm a hustler, I'm a criminal, I'm an animal, like in the zoo, and you're supposed to put me down, did my Second Amendment right work for me in the same way that it will work for somebody in a different area? So it's a lot of different questions circulating around that's like, okay, this is why we riot. Even the young man said, even when I do what you told me to do, You told me not to buy a gun illegally. Even when I do what you told me to do, I went through the class, I have my card, you're going to shoot me.
Well, we don't know the circumstances of this, and we need to see it.
Yeah.
And it would be nice if it were released as early as possible, because we don't know. We don't know exactly
what
took place there.
That's right.
Let's welcome phone calls for both of you. We're going to meet two other people who will weigh in and have been doing a lot of work in the Sherman Park area in terms of housing and many other issues. Our phone number, we're trying to understand what went on in Sherman Park over the weekend and taking a look at these huge number of issues that have been plaguing the Milwaukee area for many years. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. You can always leave messages on our Facebook page. We'd like to hear your thoughts about all of this. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show. And we do also want to tell you that we had scheduled Chief Ed Flynn to be on our program. Actually, he was asked 3 weeks ago, and it was going to be on today, and obviously he's pretty busy, so he canceled today's interview in the wake of the incidents that happened over the weekend, but he will reschedule soon. Joining us now for a little while longer, Kwabena Antoine Nixon, poet, educator, event organizer, he's co-founder of one of the largest weekly poetry experiences in the country and founder and president of Milwaukee Urban Entertainment Alliance, co-founder, as is Muhib, who's with us, Dyer of this Flood the Hood with Dreams and very, very powerful I Will Not Die Young campaign. Muhib is with us as well. He's been counseling and mentoring young people through all kinds of programs since he was in high school himself. We have a lot of phone calls coming in. We'll be with you in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to Renee in Wautoma. Hi, Renee.
Hello. I just have a comment as I'm listening a little bit. I listen to the programs consistently on public radio that help us to understand the racial divide, that help us to understand our own fears. And as a white woman who grew up in the suburbs outside of Milwaukee with a white daughter in the city of Milwaukee, and I live in a rural area right now, I just want to send a shout out to all of those working diligently to bring our facts forward. Those that are affected, I extend my deep condolences. I would ask and plead with all of my white friends who consistently want to throw up the Black Lives Matter as just a troublemaking group, that they need to do their homework and really understand the situation and try to put themselves in the place so that, as your eloquent guest said, they can learn to take it personally and not just they are doing crazy things down there.
Muhib, would you like to respond?
I'd like to say thank you for her sentiments. Thank you for her comment. And ultimately, that's what we need. You know, we need people to open up their hearts in mankind and to really begin to see the humanity in each other. There is a scriptural principle that talks about justice in a society. And what it says ultimately is the measurement for ultimate justice is if human beings are willing to witness against even themselves if they commit the crime. Mm. If they're willing to witness against their children, even if their children commit a crime. They're able to witness against their parents if they commit a crime. That speaks to the heart of an individual and how truthful you are and how much of a believer you are in justice. And what happens is in the Black community, oftentimes we're not talking about the literal family, but we view the mayor, the police chief, the judicial system, even the police department as a family. And the knock is whether or not the family is willing to witness against themselves. Mm-hmm. Are they willing to hold each other accountable? Mm-hmm. Or does protect and serve mean protect and serve the family. And if I feel like I go to court and I can't get my day in court, that the system doesn't work for me because the family is protecting themselves and not really what they were sworn to do, which is to uplift mankind as a whole, like the young lady just spoke to, then what we have is an imbalance in the thinking of the people. When there is no justice in the society, you have imbalance, and that imbalance affects us going out into the community and doing crazy things that we normally wouldn't do as human beings because we're not thinking with balance because the society has created an imbalance in us.
Thanks very much for your call. Let's go to a call from Milwaukee. Lois in Milwaukee, or Louis, whichever. It's Louis. Hi, Louis.
It's Louis. What's going on, Mo? What's up?
How you doing?
All right. I just want to tell y'all, thank y'all for shedding light on what needs to be shed. But I want to give y'all a little bit of piece of information about that area. We all got to tell the truth that area is ripe for gentrification.
Mm-hmm.
They want this area to burn so those many mansions are sold, mm-hmm. so they can create a tax base, and those kids in their park are going to be shut out. You know, they've done it in the Marquette area where I grew up. You know, they do it in Brewers Hill area. They're going to keep doing it until they want Milwaukee for themselves. We have a property that's next to the Great Lakes. And this property next to water is valuable. These folks want to ride their bike to work, not spend no gas, and they're going to do it at the expense of our young people.
All right, Louis, thank you. I lived in that community for 27 years. I'm not sure what he's talking about.
You know, the term of the gentrification.
Yeah, I know that term. But people want to burn it down, that community? I don't think so.
Well, as Muhib stated, you know, again, Kathleen, it's the conversations, as the brother just said. You know, in our community, if we could be frankly honest, that's the real conversation. There's a poem I do called
Really?
We Move Out, They Move In, all right?
They all moved into Sherman Park. Part of what Sherman Park has been. Everybody lived there.
But if you look at it now, throughout the country, you know, it's this ongoing joke. I don't know if you know. They say when you see a Starbucks coming, that's the flagship for gentrification, meaning you got a few moments to go. That is a real conversation in the black community that they would rather let it be torn down so they can rebuild, but get the people out and move others in. That's a real conversation that's going
really?
On. In Chicago, where I grew up at, in my old neighborhood, right, the west side of Chicago, this is right, it's 5 minutes from downtown, right? Get on the expressway, you're there. When I went home about 2 years ago, I saw people riding bikes, you know, they walk up to the little Starbucks. It's a clean park. They play tennis over there. They play soccer over there. And they brag how great it looks over there. And I was sitting there driving. I said, well, I'll be damned, you know. When we were over here, none of this was here, right? But what was the difference that they cleaned up the community now that they couldn't do it then? Basically, we always, you know, our mind said they let us wipe each other out. They put more guns in the neighborhood. There's more drugs in the neighborhood. We wiped each other out. They locked everybody up. They cleaned it up. And now it's a pretty neighborhood. You know, the blood is on the concrete. You would never know if you ride through there. So in Sherman Park, what he's saying is that the kids, it's not personal, right? As we stated, right? So it's gangs, it's arguments, it's fights. Then they'll say, okay, let's go in and clean it up. You lock up people, you move people. Before you know it, you start seeing yoga in the park. You start seeing Starbucks, etc. And you wonder where the people are. The people are sent way out to Brown Deer, etc. They have no access to the city. And you begin to say, well, there's a problem out there. It's not in the city anymore. So that's when we say gentrification, but that's the term, you know, that's the conversation. That's
all right. About. Stay in the studio, if you would. We're going to change microphones, mm-hmm. change guests for a minute, but stay with us because we have a lot of phone calls, and some of those you may want to chime in on. Mm-hmm. All right?
Yeah.
All right. Our phone number, by the way, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And joining us now in our studios, Pastor Willie Davis, pastor and founder of Invisible Reality Ministers. He's currently an active participant of the Community Transformation Project at Marquette, Common Ground of Southeastern Wisconsin, and also serves as a board member of the Dominican Center for Woman and as vice president of Community First. He, with community leaders, has been looking at the negative effects of the foreclosure crisis on the city of Milwaukee. Keisha Crum is also with us, lead organizer at Common Ground, nonpartisan organization comprised of many small businesses, congregations, nonprofits, and many other organizations working in the areas of education, foreclosures, and health care. Our phone number remaining the same. 800-486-8655, and we'll take more of your phone calls as well. Thank you both very much for joining us. If you had to, and I hope this is happening on many levels in the city, had to, because now people are going to be addressing this issue in a way because violence has happened and people are worried and the city doesn't want more of this to happen or have people live in unsafe conditions. What is it, of all the list of concerns here, what is it that we need to concentrate on? Because there are so many areas. Is it jobs? Is it housing? Is it the quality of schools? What is it? Pastor, you want to start?
Yes, and thank you for inviting me to this session. Well, it's of course a list of things that need to take place. I think one of the first things that need to happen is there has to be this intention. I was just sharing this with Keisha earlier. There has to be this intentional movement where there is reconciliation between the races and cultures. That has to take place. Leadership has to get together, and we have to develop a plan. And once we develop that plan, then we have to develop a strategy to actually implement that plan. But it's going to take all of us together, working together.
And what needs to be in that plan? Is jobs first?
Yes, of course. Jobs, issues dealing with health care, issue dealing with housing, education, most certainly.
Mm-hmm. Keisha, what do you think?
Well, I think that one of the big issues when our prior we're talking about the issue of the riots, and we teach that power is the ability to act. And what we see is that people don't have the ability to act on their dreams, their visions, and their hopes. Some people do. We see downtown, developers have the ability to act on their dreams. We see a new arena being born. They have the ability to act on their dream and their vision. That's not happening in our neighborhoods. And so first, we need some power. And part of what Common Ground is doing is bringing power, teaching people how to act on their dreams and visions, and delivering. When we started our work in Sherman Park, there were 300 abandoned homes. Now there's 66 in 4 years. Mm-hmm. That's real. And it's people that look like me and Pastor Will that are living in those homes, that are rebuilding those neighborhoods. And so that's the kind of thing that we need first. And the second thing is that people need jobs. When we talk about the young men that are committing the crimes, their grandfathers, their great-grandfathers, when they came to this land, they got jobs. That is not afforded to them or their sons or their nephews.
Mm-hmm. What do you do about safety in the area? Because obviously you can have a great house and have somebody move in, but people are going to have second thoughts about moving into an area where there have been a substantial number of homicides over the past week even. What are you going to do to make sure the area is safe? What needs to happen immediately and in the long run so that people can have quiet lives and not get shot?
Yeah.
What has to happen?
I mean, I always share in my sermons often is that if you create an environment where there is nothingness, if there's the sense of chaos, then you will attract those type of individuals, or you'll attract those type of systems that will come in into that environment and continue to push the environment to be more chaotic. And so, one of the things that Milwaukee Neighborhoods now is pushing for is that resources are poured into our city, into our schools, primarily into the Center Street District, which is one of the reasons why our ministry, Invisible Reality Ministries, purchased a building on 54th and Center. And we poured over $150,000 to that area. Part of our mission is that we don't want to go into areas that do not need, as the Bible would say, need of the physician. So we chose to go into the area where there is a great need. And in speaking with District 5 and 7 and 3 district captains, they said this is the worst hit area as it relates to violence and crime. And we said this is where we need to be. This is where we need to be. And so if we pour resources into those areas, you give people a sense of pride, a sense of hope, and understanding and knowing that, okay, my district or my neighborhood, it looks clean. There's trees and sidewalks are cleaned, and many of the residents that we spoke to, and countless walks and conversations that we've had, a lot of the concerns was the violence, but it was also because, well, we don't have lighting, you know, the trash is not picked up as it needs to be, and we've made countless calls to our aldermen, and we have yet to see a response. And so what we took upon ourselves, Common Ground, we said, well, listen, this is what we can do. We'll get together and we'll fight and we'll push. We will begin to change the current narrative now. Mm-hmm. And we will begin to make it the story of the community.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So. And Keisha, you've done some pushing and gotten some results. The last time we had a long conversation with you was about the Bucks Stadium and the amount of money that was going in, and one of the owners of the Bucks, also a slum landlord in this city, and putting a lot of investment. You know, it was a huge thing. Well, and it got accomplished, didn't it? We can see it being constructed and change in traffic downtown, and it's going up. The other one's coming down. Looked okay to me, but it's coming down. And yet we don't say, okay, we've got a problem. We've got an unemployment problem that's unbelievable in this city among African Americans. We just don't have the will. We don't have the what is it, but we can do something like build a stadium, and then we do nothing about getting people work, revitalizing parts of the city that really, obviously really need it.
Yeah.
So,
well, from our perspective as Common Ground, we are going to push back, because you're absolutely right. We see the development downtown, and we don't see those kind of catalytic projects happening in our neighborhood. And so we have a plan where we want to see $19 million invested in this current budget, and the 2017 budget that our mayor will be having the first informal conversation about what are the priorities for this city. And so we have talked to over 3,000 people in the north side, the south side, the east side about what are priorities. And we want to see 3 athletic fields built, 2 on the north side at King and Washington, putting in a turf and a track. And then we want to see an indoor sports complex on the south side. And we want to see Center Street fixed up, because part of the problem, as Pastor Will said, is when you talk about the broken window theory, that when you drive down these streets, it looks like nobody cares. When you drive downtown, it looks like everybody cares. Mm-hmm. And so we have to change the facade. We have to change the way that road feels. We have to change the lighting and make it beautiful and create a different kind of sense. And the other is that we need to give resources to homeowners that own homes in those neighborhoods that have old porches, old furnaces, old fences that they want to fix up or paint their beautiful old houses, and don't have the ability to get loans because their house is underwater. And so those are the kinds of things that we think are really practical that we're going to be asking our mayor and our common council to put the money in the budget, to work with us, to listen to what the community is saying about what they want in these neighborhoods as a first step.
And yet, where's the money in the budget? And this is a perennial problem. It has been a problem in this city for a long, long time. What can we do about finding meaningful work for people? Because if you have a job, you can help take care of your family. You've got a purpose in life. You've got some meaning, you hope. You feel good about what you're doing. You don't have to sell drugs on the street because you got a job. And you know, you feel much better about everything, and everybody does. So what are we going to do about the huge unemployment rate among African Americans in Milwaukee?
From our perspective, that has to be the next big campaign in the city. That we can't be talking about jobs for 97 people, 100 people, or 300 people.
Exactly.
We have to be talking about jobs for thousands, jobs that put every black man back to work in the city. Mm-hmm. And our infrastructure is crumbling. Our streets are horrible. Mm-hmm. We have 70,000 lead pipes in this city that can create jobs for men returning from prison that can put people to work, that are good paying jobs. And we need to create the political will to do that. And so what Common Ground is, you know, we're having a meeting tomorrow with our leaders to talk about what's our next big step. And it has to be around jobs for thousands of people, not little jobs, big jobs, where men can take care of their families.
Yeah. Put your earphones on. We have a ton of people who are calling in. 800-486-8655 is our number. Ray in Rhinelander, hi.
Hello. It saddens me to see what has happened. I'm 65. I live in Rhinelander, both born and raised on the north side of Milwaukee, 49th and Locust, and I was actually born on 39th and Lloyd. And you know, back then, everybody interacted really well. There was a lot of jobs for everybody. No matter what culture you were, you could have jobs. There were jobs everywhere, everywhere. Milwaukee was the best, biggest city to live in for eons. And slowly, as these industries and things moved out of the inner city or near inner city, you know, everything started to collapse. So the Common Ground people you have on are really presenting the facts very well about the past, the present, and the future. No matter where you live, you have to have a way to make a living, to take care of your family, and that's what's happening. That's what needs to happen. It just saddens me to see these respectful black families that I grew up with and all these new neighborhoods and well-to-do people of multiple culture getting along, and now look what happened to Milwaukee. I don't know how they can deal with all this.
Pastor Davis.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I've expressed often is there seems to be a breakdown within the educational system, within the job market as well. And it's something that we have to focus on. As Keisha stated earlier, we have to push for jobs to return back for the families. And as the gentleman stated, that yes, jobs were, I mean, my grandfather, my father, jobs were, individuals would be able to graduate from high school and actually go into these fields. And I think one of the things that's missing is that, you know, we've heard for so long that the push now is for you to go to college and get a four-year degree. And oftentimes people forget that, you know, individuals are also blessed with gifts and talents. And if someone says, well, I want to be a welder, or I want to be someone sure. who builds cars, or I want to go to the area over the field of working as an electrician, you know, these things should be an option for them. And I think there's just been this, this imbalance of careers being presented to many of our youth.
We'll take more phone calls in a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655. Club and I want you to grab a microphone here for a moment, too, because there are a couple of people who want to talk about personal responsibility, and you have written things that will be pertinent to the answer to that. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to John in La Crosse. Hi, John.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi.
Yes, I really enjoyed your guest there this afternoon, and the topics always seem to direct energies towards outside sources, such as city, state, or federal government assisting, and yet it has yet to be mentioned of the individual responsibility for their action, regardless if it's the inner-city family structure or the personal accountability. I wonder if you could address that for me.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Kwabena, you've written about what you used to be, and I want you to be as honest as you want to be, and how things were turned around. And I know you must deal with this with the youths that you talk to, individual responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right, that mic's not working, so let's go over to that mic. Right. Okay, great.
In the personal responsibility, first off, thank you guys for having us on here. It is a chance that we can change lives around. One of the main things we go to the young people and say is that it's possible. It's possible. But we have to get past this. Muhib says this so eloquently in one of his poems, the pull yourself up by the bootstrap theory. You know, it's possible. If I did it, you can did it. That's not true. It's very not true when you say, if I did it, you can do it. It's possible that you can do it. But we all have different circumstances and reasons and why we should do it. I had a strong why. I had a great support. And someone came outside of my neighborhood and showed me that there's a other side of town that I can go on. Then there was a man in my neighborhood who talked to us every day. He wasn't a professional, quote unquote, doctor lawyer. It was just Mr. Underwood who worked at Zenith TV. And every day, Mr. Underwood talked to us about life. And years later, we picked up. So when we say personal responsibility, I think the people in our communities take personal responsibility, because the fact that you say, I'm not going to sit here and starve, I'm going to find a way, is personal responsibility. Now, the means they go about it is quite different, but we can't, they're always saying go outside the community. I don't think people are looking outside the community. The people are in the community finding ways. We are very resilient in those communities. They're very resilient, but it's not pushed in the right area. And another thing I want to say, when you say responsibility, they're creating jobs.
let's not forget, there's an economy that exists in our community. Entrepreneurship flourishes in our community. That's one thing we have to push to people, that entrepreneurship is just the same way. So when you're outside saying there's personal responsibility, there's numbers of personal responsibility in our community. You just have to be acknowledged, recognized, and let people know it's possible. Not that we all can do it, but give them this sense that it's possible. Imagery.
Yeah, but you also talked about inspiration. So you need somebody who's got your back and who can really help you develop, right? You need that, and we all need that in our lives.
And it's also, as he said, as the pastor said, driving through your community. If your community... Everything around you must look like you to give you some type of hope. If you live in certain areas, when you walk out and there's a strip of businesses that are owned by people who look like you, there's a chance that you may be. But if you walk through your neighborhoods and it's almost desolate, where is the inspiration and hope? You can't wake up in the morning. The first sign you see is a alcohol sign. What does that tell you? Go right. Have a drink. But and then over here it says go to school. So what I'm saying is that, yes, you need inspiration, but there needs to be a pride in the neighborhood also. So.
Yeah, Pastor Davis, chime in on this.
Yeah, you know, that civic government, church government, and family government are all designed to help create better self-government so that you govern yourself in how you walk, how you talk, how you act. And what I believe is that it's because of the failing of those systems that we have chaos now in our society, that people, they cannot or have not learned how they cannot learn how to govern themselves. Civic government issues, you know, our churches, you know, we have to push for the churches to actually be more responsible and more outside, to actually grow outside of the four walls of that building. Mm-hmm. And actually go out and have real communication with the people. And then also family government. I spoke earlier about the breakdown of the family. And so it is because of the breakdown of those three systems that we have these issues today.
We have an email from Judy. Judy says, thank you, good people, talking about all of you, about what's happening in Milwaukee. I'm especially encouraged to hear about Action Common Ground is spearheading. Please urge these speakers to take the next step and run for office, including the state legislature. They will win to change anything. We need to do it through public policy. Keisha, you going to run for office?
That's why I organize.
That's why you organize.
There's a lot more freedom, a lot more capacity to act and to create change as an organizer, in my opinion, than it is to be elected official. Now, we need elected officials to be champions for the solutions that we bring to them. That's that right. We want to see done in our neighborhoods. And so I think the real power is with citizens and with community organizing.
Mm. Pastor Davis, you going to run for office?
No.
No,
I my calling is just to be the individual that continues to push and be a strong force for change. So I will do that by working alongside the Common Ground with Keisha and my brothers over here, Muhib, and we're moving forward and we're getting our voice out in order to help encourage and build society.
Yeah. It's been such a tough week. I mean, it's been a tough year. It's a lot of years. It's more than just a week. But what a hard week this has been for this city. It's, you know, you think about Milwaukee. It's a beautiful city. This lake is gorgeous. The downtown, which needs to be revitalized, is being revitalized. But this race issue has been with us for such a long period of time. And this segregation that this whole area has, we can't live like this. You know, I don't know how long it takes for us to learn this. I don't know if you learned from riots about it. I don't know. Is this what we do? We learn from riots?
I think so.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that the question becomes, we react to riots, but what do we do after? And what are the organizations and the institutions and the political leaders are going to work with us for the long-term plan to really make these communities better?
Muhib, give me an answer in 15 seconds, if you can. Do we learn from riots?
Yeah, it's. I believe the riots are an opportunity to wake up for us all. You can't dismiss it. You can't sweep it under the rug.
Okay. Thank you all very much for being with us. We've done a lot of shows on all of these related topics, and rest assured we will do many more. Thanks so much to Scotty Myers for producing the hour, to KP Willie for producing and doing on-air production, and we thank Pastor Willie Davis for being with us. We thank Muhib Dyer and Kwabena Antoine Nixon and Keisha Crum for being with us. Thanks for listening, everybody. This is coming up.